This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. In 2010 is the 25th anniversary of the premiere of John Adams' Harmonielehre, the work that solidified his reputation as one of America's most promising new composers. Nowadays, he's one of the most popular composers in the world, with more performances of orchestral works than any other American composer. But in 1985, he wasn't much known outside the Bay Area. He'd been on the faculty of the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, where he was conductor of their new music ensemble, then served as the San Francisco Symphony's composer-in-residence and founder of its New and Unusual Music Concerts. He had scored a major success with Harmonium in 1981, which prompted the symphony to commission another large orchestral work from him, and expectations were high, but so was the pressure. For a whole year, John Adams did nothing but write and discard. He made what seemed like an unending series of false starts, but then, one night, he had a dream in which he said he saw himself driving across the Bay Bridge and looking out saw a huge tanker in the bay. It was an image of immense power and gravity and mass. And while I was observing the tanker, he said, it suddenly took off like a rocket ship with an enormous force of levitation. As it rose out of the water, I could see a beautiful brownish-orange oxide on the bottom part of its hull. When I woke up the next morning, those huge chords that begin to piece came to me out of that image, and the piece was off like an explosion. For 3 months, Adams worked like a man possessed. At the risk of sounding corny, he had found his future by looking into the past. Adams had always been grouped with the minimalists, the school of Steve Reich and Philip Glass that has its basis in finding dramatic tension in repetition through incremental changes. It's a style that can be either mesmerizing or maddening, but it took the world of art music by storm in the 1970s and 80s. Adams, though, was worried about reaching a dead end and was beginning to think about how to stretch the boundaries of his style. Just as punk rock had tried to reject mainstream pop music and strip it down to its roots, most of Adams's minimalist colleagues treated the central traditions of Western music with disdain, but not Adams. "I don't try to turn my back aggressively on the past," he says. "I try to embrace it." He describes himself as not conservative, but conserving. Even the title of his new work was a handshake with the past. Adams has always liked referential titles, and if they involve puns, so much the better. Harmonielehre is the name of one of the great books on music, first published in 1911 by Arnold Schoenberg. Lehre pertains to what is taught, but in this case, Adams was thinking more about learning harmony. "I'm not trying to teach anyone harmony," he said in 1985. "This is the culmination, so far, of my teaching myself about harmony. But I also thought about harmony in the human, the psychological sense, about living with oneself, about balance, harmony in life." End quote. Harmonielehre is in three parts. Part 1 is the longest and the only one without a title. Adams describes it as a huge symphonic movement, or perhaps a single movement symphony like Sibelius's Seventh, a symphony within this symphony. The metrical patterns change constantly, but the pounding beat which opens the piece is relentless and insistent. It's not until nearly halfway through Part 1 that the tempo relaxes for a passage of slower music, which Adams describes as being full of Sehnsucht, or yearning. final section combines the long lyric lines of the middle of the movement with the insistent, propulsive energy of its opening. The second, slow movement is called the Anfortis Wound. Now, this is not the Amfortas of Wagner's Parsifal, the knight who guarded the Holy Grail and whose unhealing wound was caused by his carelessness with the Holy Spear. No, this is an earlier version from the late 12th century. Anfortis, who was wounded not in the side, but in the groin. He was wounded, Adams points out, due to pride, to hubris, and the wound caused impotence. The Anfortis Wound is a piece about sickness and infirmity, both physical and spiritual. End quote. Adams calls Sibelius's Fourth Symphony his primary generating model for the second movement, not a model in the concrete sense, but an inspiration from the past to be filtered through the present. The movement begins with a sound which Adams calls the key to Sibelius's Fourth, muted cellos, playing an expressive melody against a softly rolling kettle drum and a choir of double basses. The harmonies revolve like an agonizingly slow kaleidoscope. Unlike the first movement, the meters here remain regular, numbingly regular, as Adams uses them to focus on the imagery of sickness and confinement, one day after another, just rolling on. And they roll right into the third movement, which also begins slowly, but where the second movement is racked with agony, this music brings healing. The title of part three is Meister Eckhart and Quacky. Meister Eckhart is the common name for Eckhart von Hochheim, a 13th century Dominican friar and mystic whose chief subject was the soul's union with God. Quacky was the baby name for the Adams' daughter Emily, who was 9 months old when her father completed this piece. In addition to his dream about the tanker, Adams' other inspiration was a vision of Meister Eckhart floating through the firmament with a baby on his shoulder. Adams' note in the score says, Quacky, who is still too young to walk, rides upon Meister Eckhart's shoulder as they glide among the heavenly bodies. Quacky whispers the secret of grace into Meister Eckhart's ear. End quote. Adams describes the end of the piece as a tremendous harmonic struggle, with the different tonalities vying for dominance. I simply placed the keys together, as if in a mixer, and let them battle it out. And finally, E-flat wins through its strength, and this moment seems like an epiphany. End quote. Liberation, spiritual sickness, and grace. That's the progression of the imagery in Harmonilehre. Adams spoke of the work in terms of harmony in the psychological as well as the musical sense, about balance. He feels that, in his words, most of the best 20th century art has been thinking art. There's been a triumph of the thinking portion at the expense of the feeling portion. And while he stops just short of saying so, his hope seems to be that Harmony Lyra might be a work of balance, of harmony. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.